Good evening. I don't know how many of you have the book or how many of you would need a copy of the chapter that we're studying, the Genjo Koan. Does everyone have a copy? That's for me. Passing out my notes. You wouldn't be able to make sense of that. Thank you very much. So we began the subject of Genjo Koan last week, sort of in the flurry of the Dalai Lama's aura, since we met here after some of us had just been to be with him. So I think I'll just go ahead with further notes. But I want to point out about the first lines, the interesting thing that it begins with three sentences, the first word of which is pointing to time, when all dharmas are the Buddha Dharma. When the 10,000 dharmas are without fixed self, since the Buddha way by nature goes beyond. And then the fourth one, therefore flowers fall even though we love them. So he's really doing what I often talk about, which is bringing up more than one side. Our minds work usually, we usually claim one side for ourselves. This is the way it is. And then it's hard to change our mind about it because we're already sure we know. And in our practice, one of the best exercises that I know is to remember to bring up the other side. Or in many cases, to realize that we can turn what we understand around in many different ways, as if it were a jewel with many facets, and each one shines a different kind of insight into the immensity of the truth. It's that way with the triple treasure we call, the three treasures or Buddha, Dharma, Sangha. It's all three different ways of turning this jewel and trying to express what really with our limited minds can't quite completely express, except to say three treasures. So in this case, one aspect or one view is when all dharmas are the Buddha Dharma, this is the Buddha's teaching. This is Buddha's teaching. There's delusion and realization, the first noble truth. There's suffering, there's ignorance, there's delusion. And there's a way to understand it through practice. We do suffer life and death, and Buddhas and living beings are in this world of samsara, struggling to understand our life. That's one way. And then this next one is when the 10,000 dharmas are without fixed self. You have to have a fixed self in the first one. It's about me and my life and my practice. In the second one, when the 10,000, when everything doesn't have a fixed personality, when we understand that those roses are here for just a very short time, when we understand that the pencil in my hand can become a toy for a dog in half a second if a dog comes by, that things morph in continually in this flexible way, that 10,000 things, dharmas, don't have anything that is fixed. Realizing that, we're free. Free from the delusion that we can hold things in one's place. We can nail it all down. We can be something and be someone in a fixed and infinite kind of way. So this is the Heart Sutra. This is erasing everything that Buddha taught. No Buddhas, no living beings, no birth and death. Those are all ideas. Even though they're beautiful ideas, they're the ideas that inspire us. They're the ideas by which we live. Still, they're just thoughts. And if we really want to be free and truly understand Buddha nature, we have to see through our thoughts. See through the impermanence, even of our very best thinking. So then he goes to what the Buddha way is. This is his own take on it. Since the Buddha way, by nature, goes beyond dichotomy of abundance and deficiency, that there's never too much or too little of anything. It's Uji all over again. That where we are, when and who we are, is this moment. And it's not too much and it's not too little. It's just the way it is. And the way it is that things come and go. That living beings and Buddhas are living all together side by side, sometimes living being, ordinary being, sometimes Buddha. That it's all of a piece, that samsara and nirvana are the same place, which is what we talked about with the paramitas, trying to cross over to get from the samsaric painful place into the ideal perfection. You struggle and struggle and then realize this place is the place. This place is the only place. So on number four, he goes on to say, therefore, flowers fall even though we love them. This is the truth of it. We don't have much control over what happens around us. Weeds grow even though we dislike them. Conveying oneself toward all things to carry out practice enlightenment is delusion. That's the biggest delusion, to think that I carry myself and lay my blessings out on everything, or try to control everything in some way and bless some things and curse others. It's how we usually relate. There's some kind of space between us, and in that space we choose how to be. You said, all things coming and carrying out practice enlightenment through the self is realization. So it's the same thing that happened to Shakyamuni Buddha when he sat under the tree. When he had his realization, he said, all beings are enlightened with me, through me. This is how we truly relate. This is how we know what we know. If we think we're conveying ourself, we're projecting. And so all we see are various aspects of our own thinking. When I say you, and imagine that I know you, mostly it's my own imagination. It's my own projection. If I ask you, tell me about yourself, tell me your truth, suddenly the whole chemistry of the thing changes, doesn't it? It becomes a completely different kind of interchange. Those who greatly realize delusion, he says, are Buddhas. When we realize how we're projecting, when we realize how our ignorance is disserving us, you could say, that realization itself is Buddha nature. Those who are greatly deluded in realization are living beings. In other words, everyone is realized, but some people are deluded in the midst of it. We say living being. Furthermore, there are those who attain realization beyond realization and those who are deluded within delusion. Really lost or really found, you could say. And it's not that any of this is fixed. It's always moving and shifting and changing. But it all depends on self-knowledge. It depends on studying the self, which is coming up. So, when Dogen says that so there's something in here I wanted to read you about Okamura, what Okamura said. The subject of practice is not the personal self, but all beings. This is something we take up practice, we almost always take it up for our own sake, usually to save our life in some way. It's almost like being in the ocean and finding some little shred to hold on to in the ocean. But the subject of practice is not the personal self. To practice is to awaken to the self that is connected to all beings, or the 10,000 dharmas. Dogen says that these myriad dharmas are themselves Buddha Dharma, and the reality of all dharmas is the Dharma body of Buddha, the Dharmakaya, or Buddha itself. Since we are part of all dharmas, the foundation of our practice must be our awakening to the reality that we are indeed part of all dharmas, or part of Buddha. In other words, it is not I who practice, but rather Buddha carries out Buddha's practice through me. In our Zazen practice and in our daily activity of Bodhisattva practice, it is not a matter of individual actions based on individual willpower and effort. It is rather the myriad dharmas, or all beings, that carry out practice through our individual bodies and minds. Every now and then we get a sense of this, especially if we've been sitting for a long period of time. When we begin to interact in the world again, things often flow more easily because we have dropped our interference with what's actually happening, what's supporting and living through us. We're not ever alone. Everything in our life and world is holding and supporting us as we go. So the whole point of Zazen is to discover that self, the self of the 10,000 dharmas, the self of the body of Buddha itself, which is us. And yet we can't say, I'm Buddha. But if we can't acknowledge and accept that we are Buddha, then we're still stuck on this side, so-called. There's no way to understand this without Zazen practice, and no way to continue to understand it without continuing to sit whole life long. Because the flowers do fall even though we love them, and the weeds do come up even though we hate them. That our life is difficult. The life of Buddha is difficult. And it isn't personal. Even though we have to get up in the morning and be somebody, have to answer the telephone with our name and take responsibility for what we do. So, as you see, it's complete paradox. And we always tend to want it to be one way. It's not one way. It's always. All these ways. As it's happening, Uchi, this being, this time. So our delusions are, in a way, a gift. And that's why it's often said in our practice that our enemies are our best teachers, because if you meet something you really can't solve and can't deal with and it's really, really hard, that's the place. That's the place where projections are happening. That's the place where it's really hard to take it in, to accept it and acknowledge it, so that it can be seen for what it is. And yet that's our effort toward the truth. Last week I was invited to give a talk on metta to a Vipassana group. And it's not a Zen subject really at all, so it was very interesting. I thought, oh, what am I going to say about metta? And yet when I thought about how metta practice is done, where loving kindness is given to oneself first, with the understanding that that's the basis of our practice. Without having love for ourselves, we really can't practice at all very well, because we can't see clearly. And then we extend the love to those who we already love. And then we extend the love to the people that we really don't know, and then to those who we don't like. And then it goes out and out until it covers the whole universe. But it doesn't stop there. Then you bring it back, slowly bring it back, and extend it still to your enemies, and then your friends, and then your loved ones, and then finally to yourself. It sounds like somebody made it up. But when I thought about it, I realized that many, many years ago, when we were still having Sesshin in Hidden Villa, so it was Haiku Zendo days, that happened to me. That, and we had a long sit, probably 7 days, and I began to have that experience just spontaneously. And it wasn't until a couple of years later that somebody mentioned it, because I didn't know what it was. I just thought it was one more of the amazing things that happen when you sit 7 days sesshin. And then somebody talked about metta, and I thought, oh, that happened to me. And they were saying and how you have to do it, and it's a practice, and you do this and this and this. And I thought, somebody had that experience. And then they said, I know, I'm going to tell everybody about this. And they wrote it all down, and then it got in the books, and then the teachers got a hold of it, and then it became a practice. And when actually, it's just our own life and experience. It's in all of us. So that's true of all of these teachings, actually, that these are experience that's being talked about, not somebody's hot idea cooked up at a desk or even in a sesshin as some kind of good idea in order to help people. It's how it is of us. So maybe that's enough. There's time for a little bit of discussion.
I think this seems to speak a lot to the practice of just sitting without a specific object of meditation.
Yes.
It's called in the Christian contemplative tradition, waiting for God.
Yes.
I'm wondering, since this was written by Dogen, the founder of Soto Zen, what was his role in bringing that practice of just sitting into practice, and what was the precedent like for that in traditions of Buddhism?
Well, one thing, he didn't found Soto Zen. It's a Chinese founders, two of them. And he brought it to Japan. He was Japanese and was uncomfortable with the teaching about Buddha nature when he was in a training as a monk. And his teachers couldn't satisfy his question about Buddha nature. If all beings have Buddha nature, then why do we have to practice? Which is what he's bringing up here too. It's a real good question. But Bodhidharma is the one who brought the just sitting from India, long, long before Dogen, way back almost at the turn of the era, the Christian era. And so it has a long history in China, the just sitting Chan, before it came to Japan, much less to us. But you're right, it is just sitting. And I hope you all have a chance to read Okamura. He has a very nice thing in here about Shikantaza and how exactly about that it's truly without a goal, without an aim. And it's doesn't seem, almost seems impossible because we always have some kind of reason for doing what we do. But Kodo Sawaki said, Zazen is good for nothing. And if you sit with allowing yourself to simply be alive and present, then that's Zazen. Trying not to fall off the cushion, Koban always said. That's all you can do, is just to try not to fall over, which sometimes is hard. It's exactly as you say. Sometimes I think it's like, a friend of mine said once, it's like sending a love letter over and over and never getting an answer. You just offer yourself with a big heart. Yeah. Ellie?
You said how most of us come to practice to save ourselves. And it just seems to me that there has to somehow to get to the cushion. There has to be some kind of crisis. For me.
For many, many people, sometimes really huge trauma. And sometimes it just feels like it's different for everybody.
But then, having gotten there, perhaps, or just slowing down enough to be able to sit,
yeah,
then some of the rest of this becomes possible to comprehend, and some not really comprehend, but just sort of take in, I guess, to awareness.
Mm-hmm.
Is that,
yes,
kind of how?
Yes. Yes, it's mysterious in a way. I often say it's like a baby learning to walk. A baby is crawling around, and you would think he'd be perfectly happy, totally indulged, crawling around on the floor, but something impels the child to pull himself up. And then he falls over and crashes and gets bruises and it's hard and he cries and then he gets right up again. Over and over and over until he can walk. And you think, what is in that little baby that gets him walking like that? And I think it feels that way to me about our practice also. That something is in us that, or, I can't say there is a thing in us, but there's this impulse that just keeps us going, even though it sometimes is really hard. it feeds us in some way. And again, it's not personal. In that sense, it's definitely not a personal thing. It's just what happens. Well, it's 8:00.